your future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's John Belmer, Cam Smith, Sean Mapes, and Brian McDonald.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Crew it now!
Welcome into the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5. Brian McDonald, Sean Mapes, Cam Smith will be with us here soon. He had a little bit of a dog emergency at home. A dog's fine. But apparently threw up all over the place, so he's got to clean it up.
Yeah, the dog's not 100% fine.
Yeah, no, maybe not 100% fine. Yeah, he's
doing all right.
What was the Astros buzzword for years? Discomfort?
Discomfort.
Yeah, the dog's dealing with some discomfort.
intestinal discomfort or something.
Probably more legit discomfort than the way the Astros were using it over the years past. But welcome into the bullpen. We'll be here until 11 o'clock. Of course, Mount Rushmore plus one coming up at 10:30. Got a lot to get to. We'll talk about the Astros' win last night, some of the things on the horizon for them. Also talk about some college football and NFL storylines, some of the buzz around the Texans camp, a whole lot more. And again, I'll mention again, Mount Rushmore Pulse 1 at 10:30. We got Colton behind the board with us for the first time.
First-timer.
I don't know if Colton's aware of this, but I believe this now also gets him into the Texas Radio Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
In far less than the 26 years to kick those bums. Lance is down the hall. John and Lance.
That's why.
Yeah, I got to say a little bit softer. A little bit softer when Lance is three doors down. But let's talk about the Astros game, Sean, off the bat. Good win last night. The Astros, I think I want to start with Cam Smith because it's a guy that
we've... not here yet.
Well done. Well done. That's why they pay you the big bucks.
Yeah. It's like
the Astros...
You're two of that joke.
Yeah, you're two of that joke. But the Astros' Cam Smith came through last night with two home runs, and he was someone that, I mean, I'll admit it, hands up. I've dogged him for a while. Hands up.
Boo this man.
It's boo this man, right? Because before this hot streak, and we're about to, I'm going to bury him before, it's a little bit of a compliment sandwich here. I'm going to bury him, then I'm going to pat him on the back. But coming into, before this hot streak, he was literally the sixth worst batter in all of baseball, in terms of batting average, for anyone that qualified. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I think it was outfielders. Maybe it was all of baseball. I can't remember. It was at least outfielders. But either way, bad. And all of a sudden, he's just been lighting it up. Two home runs last night. And last eight games, Sean, he's hitting .413, 1218 OPS, which is above what Yordan does on the reg. Now, this is an eight-game sample size.
Like Barry Bonds. Prime Barry Bonds.
Yeah, it's like prime Barry Bonds. And I just point out, again, just to show it to... Because it's easier to digest the numbers when you put it over 162-game pace, not actually saying he's going to do this. 162-game pace of 40 homers and 121 RBI. Cam Smith is on a tear.
Yeah. Pretty good. He's going to be the best player in baseball over the next 162 games, says Brian McDonald.
Not what I said.
Yeah, it is encouraging. He is still, in the stage of his big league career where you're just like, I'm willing to go, yes, this is a small sample size. Yes, I don't think he's going to hit 440 home runs and 100.
if he does that, Sean, greatest player of all time.
Greatest player of all time. But it is like encouraging, and it's more of like, now at this point, it's more of like, okay, this is raising... or at least building back some of my expectations that I have for him for 2027 and if there is a 2027 and beyond.
Yeah.
You know, but
small font there. Yeah, 2027 maybe
60 games that they play. Yeah. But I think that this is more of like a long term, like, okay, this is encouraging. The young fellas figuring it out at least a little bit. And again, it is an eight-game sample, but he is playing very well.
See, I'm torn where to fall on the what to make of like a sample size of Cam Smith, because we've seen him do this before.
Yeah.
Beginning of his rookie year, he was pretty good, slumped off. Then we know right around the All-Star break with that Dodgers series, got white hot, and then back to being a bum. And then this year, this is now his second stretch of playing pretty good baseball, but on either side of that has been some of the worst offense in all of baseball. So I think I made this comparison. I don't remember if you were on the show that day or if it was Cam and Belmer.
But I probably wasn't listening either.
Yeah, you probably weren't. Even if you were here, honestly, probably not listening.
Yeah.
But I made this comparison before. He's like great value Jalen Green. in that we would go through these conversations.
I definitely was not paying attention when you said that.
We would go through these conversations every year, the 4 years Jalen Green was here. It's like, oh, this hot streak's amazing. Can he do it when Alpi Shingun comes back, right?
Yeah.
Like, we kept doing that with Jalen Green. Obviously, his highs were much higher than Cam's highs, and his stretches were longer than Cam's stretches. That's why I call Cam Smith the great value version of it. But I do start to wonder, is like, if he wasn't so young, I would go, okay, this is just a Jalen Green hot streak. It doesn't mean anything. But because he's so young, because he had so little time in the minors, only five games double A or higher, like, I wonder if this is just a young guy finally figuring it out, or is this just a Jalen Green hot streak?
Yeah, I mean, so the home run numbers, because that's the Jalen Green comparison, is the, like, Jalen Green, his hot streaks were just, like, when he made 70% of his three-pointers.
Right. And when he didn't, bum.
Yeah, and it's like he played the exact same way in his good games and his bad games. It's just he would go to have a 10-day stretch where he just made 7 out of every 10 threes that he took, and so he'd score 36 points per game over 12 games. And this is like somewhat similar where it's like this is pretty long ball dependent on Cam Smith. I mean, I was it last week, maybe the week before, where we were talking about like kind of before the stretch where he still wasn't playing well, but all of his hits were like either big hits situationally
or
clearing double kind of stuff of like the, it is
he
a
was
very
showing
loud
the signs of turning it around. Yeah.
And I think we said like he's 4 for 30 in his last however, and it's like, but it was a very loud 4.
Yeah, I think off the show, off the air, we comped him to Robert, like a low budget Robert Ori.
Yeah.
Like, he just didn't do much, except for when it counted.
Yeah, the biggest shots of all time, and it's the, you know, July and August baseball version of that for Cam Smith. But yeah, I still put him in the bucket of, like, this is intriguing, or maybe not intriguing, but this is like, okay, like, some again, signs of life for a guy who, you know, before he swung a major league bat, before he swung a triple A bat, he still hasn't
swung a triple A bat.
But he was called the aircraft carrier that can carry this team's offense.
He did last night. He did last night.
They don't win without him.
I mean, obviously, Christian Walker came through with a big 2-run single. Yordan had an RBI too. So it wasn't just Cam Smith, but two bombs. You're certainly the star of the game. And he, you know what? He has a chance to inadvertently kind of bail Dana Brown out for like what a lot of people are like kind of wringing their hands about. I was like, I wish they would have done more at the trade deadline.
Oh, yeah.
But, hey, if you get a new version of Cam Smith, Sean, that's like acquiring a player at the deadline.
No one else got a 400 on base.
440 home run pace.
Yeah, no one else got that.
No one else
1200
got that.
1,200 OPS.
Yeah, no one else got that. But I don't think you and I have talked on the air since the trade deadline went down on Monday. Of course, the Astros trade Dalton or trade for Dalton Varsho, trading away Spencer Arrigetti, who, by the way, already hurt again.
Yeah,
so maybe Dana Brown knew. I don't know. But what are your overall?
Sold him a lemon.
What are your overall thoughts on what the Astros did at the deadline?
It's a little on the light side. Can't say I wasn't at least like a little disappointed. Because I think we made it pretty clear. Or at least I made it pretty clear that, like, I wanted two guys at the
very
least.
You had an ultimatum for Dana Brown.
Yeah, I wanted.
He pounded the table. Two guys.
And
he got you one.
And we said it, again, this is one of those things where I don't know if I said it with Dell, with Joe.
It all runs together.
At some point, I said it.
All look alike, you know.
Yeah, right. You, Dell, whatever. Sure. Sit in the same seat. all three of you sit in the same seat.
That's true.
But we were saying, like, basically any major league outfield bat is acceptable and an improvement. And Dalton Varsho, when he gets traded, I looked at the numbers. I was like, this really is any outfield bat.
He took you literally.
Yeah.
He took you literally.
You know what, Dana? Got to hand it to you.
This is on me. I wish I set the bar a little higher.
Yeah, maybe I should have said, you know, 710.
Quality.
710 OPS. I think Varsho, you know, good player, center fielder. You just need a center fielder. He is a major league center fielder, and but it is a little underwhelming. A, because he didn't get any arms. B, because again, it's not exactly like the offensive, shot in the arm that this team ultimately really needed really needs still.
No, for sure. And it's funny because, and we're going to go to this Dubon audio here in a second, Colton. But like last night, the Astros are still kind of in a spot where against left-handed pitchers, they need that other bat to a point where they were so desperate they called up Jake Myers. He would end up blooping one in to right field at one point in the game. But it's funny that, yeah, Dalton Varsho was called up, and they told us right away, he's the everyday center fielder. He's the everyday center fielder. In game four with Dalton Varsho, his ass was in left field because they called up Jake Myers, who can't even hit over 200, to play center field.
Yeah,
because he's a right-handed bat against a lefty.
All you really need to know is the report that came out yesterday, last night.
The Rome report?
The Chandler Rome report. Where
that sounded like I was talking about Jim Rome. The Rome report. I don't know.
Yeah. The Astros are still looking for an outfield name that are they both on waivers?
They're all on waivers. Yeah,
Ref Snyder, Hayes, Soler.
We looked at the numbers of Jorge Soler the other day. It's
no
been,
bueno.
Yeah, no bueno, for sure.
And he's a DH, so I don't know what you
Yeah, he hasn't. I don't think he's played the outfield on a regular basis in a while. But yeah,
that speaks to the deadline you had where 4 days later, it's like, looking, by the way.
Not only are we still looking, but the guy that we told, everyday center fielder, 4 days later, he's in left field. Because we have to call up Jake Myers, who can't hit above 200 to be on the major league roster.
I think that's more, if I were to guess, I'd say that's more of a left-handed pitcher thing than it is.
It's a platoon thing.
Yeah, and
it's
like
a platoon thing for sure.
For whatever reason, they like Jake and
but
center
that speaks
more than
to what they did at the deadline. Like, you're still in a spot where against left-handed pitching, you don't really have an answer in left field.
Yeah, and even like Ref Snyder is like, right-handed only, or left-handed pitching only. Like, he is a split, like,
a right-handed Trammell.
Yeah, it's like, I always just am like, can we aim a little bit higher than a guy who cannot pitch against, or cannot play against half the league? Like
over half the league? What percentage of major league pitchers are right-handed?
I was just thinking 50-50, left-right. You're right. Left-handed pitchers are less likely.
Yeah.
I'm like, I would just like a guy with a little bit more neutral platoon splits that can like just play, and then Trammell can be like a pinch hit option. But I guess that's asking too.
That's asking way too much.
Look at where we're at.
You know who? It's strange, Sean. He hits right handed. He can play center field.
Sounds good.
Team's familiar with him.
Okay.
720 OPS.
Wow.
Pretty.
Wow. George Springer,
a Gold Glove defender.
Wow. Whoa.
Would you like to have that guy on your roster?
Yeah. I mean, we're just talking about Rob Ref Snyder. Yes, I would
like
that guy.
His name is Mauricio Dubon.
Heard of him,
yeah. In a funny moment the other day with Mauricio Dubon with the Braves broadcast. Go ahead and play that audio for us, Colton.
Hey, what about taking the ball off the helmet from a catcher tonight? That catcher by surprise. Do you have any idea what was going on?
I braced myself. I kind of knew what was going on. You know, they teach the catchers to do that in case you move and everything. He was apologizing. Kind of felt bad for him because he felt so bad. So I kept telling him, don't worry about it. Next time I'll kick your ass.
This is live TV. Okay.
My bad. Sorry, kid.
I think he was okay with that.
Yeah, soft boy.
Yeah, I mean,
Braves broadcast.
Show me without telling me that he didn't watch the Attitude Era with Stone Cold Steve Austin without telling me, right? But yeah, I think that's one of those things. I mean, it's obviously that moment was fun with Mauricio Dubon, but it's one of those things you look back on with Dana's offseason where they trade out Mauricio Dubon for Nick Allen in the cost cutting move, I think, say, $5 million,
and did nothing with it.
And how much better would we feel about the outfield if it's Dubon playing every day, or at least being the left-handed platoon to Trammell? Like, I mean, if he's that option in center field or in the outfield that we're talking about instead of Rob Ref Snyder and Austin Hayes and Jorge Soler.
Literally guys who got cut.
Yeah. It's like Dana Brown's made moves. Not all of them I like, clearly, and that was definitely one of them.
No.
I don't know where that falls in the pecking order of – because this starting pitching offseason was a disaster.
I kind of think, like, if you lump them all together, it's starting pitching.
Starting pitching is
like,
one.
Because I don't know which one is, like, actually the worst. Whether it's Emi, Burrows. Like, I can't actually really do the math. Burrows, he gave up Jacob Melton.
What were some of the other names here? We have Ryan Weiss.
Weiss is actually the worst pitcher of the bunch.
Four pitchers he acquired in the offseason were DFA'd, like, more than a month ago. Nate Pearson, Ryan Weiss, Rodri Munoz, and Christian Roa.
I forgot.
Exactly.
Roa? Oh, yeah. He got defense.
Then
like
you have
March.
Emi, who they're paying $18 million to be in the bullpen because his ERA is 5.55. You have Peter Lambert, thumbs up. Got that one right. Mike Burrows, 5.99 ERA. His ass was demoted to the minors.
I think Burrows is worse than Emi because he's just like not in the major leagues.
Yeah,
he's,
yeah. And then Kaiwei Tang, who maybe feels a little unfair to put him on this list, but he's been pretty.
Who?
Kaiwei Tang. Oh, sorry, Dong. Oh, Kaiwei Dong. Yeah.
Thank you.
He's now demoted as well, and been just a guy. Yeah, that was kind of a. You know what? Let's go to break. Cam's finally here. He's cleaned up the dog puke. Let's go to break. We'll get him on Astros conversation when the bullpen returns. ESPN Radio 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to The Bullpen
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's John Bellmer, Cam Smith, Sean Mapes, and Brian McDonald.
Welcome into The Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5, Brian McDonald. Welcome to the show, Cam Smith.
Hello.
Sean Mapes, our man Colton behind the glass. Cam, what'd you do right before we... Like the listeners on this fine radio program didn't get to hear you do whatever the hell that was right before the segment started.
That was my wake up.
Were you psyching yourself up?
Yes, I very much was.
So
do you normally do that in like the car?
Yeah, no, you did right before Sean and I.
Usually, I'd pull into the parking lot and I would do that, but didn't have that time.
It's like a full cam. Well, you didn't headbutt a door, so it can't be full cam Scataboo. But it felt like you're going cam Scataboo on, psyching yourself up there.
I was.
Everything all right? I know you were. The dog caused you to be late here.
She did. She got a little sick. I'm also running on like 3 hours of sleep.
Yeah, you said you worked 21 hours?
I worked straight? All three jobs yesterday.
Straight?
Wow. Straight.
21 hours straight?
9 to 6 at the school my last day, which was eventful because I had to say bye to my kids. Then I came here for 3 hours, and then I went straight to the bar and didn't get out till 4:30.
Damn, Cam.
Yeah.
Hey, you
damn look, those karaokeers.
I mean, you're already here, but if you want to leave, it's cool, man.
Yeah.
No, I'm Gucci.
That's what
you're
I
good?
Said.
Yeah, right.
I walked in. I was like, I would not have shown up today.
No, I would not have showed up. You're more of a man than I am. So we were talking about
we're all men here.
Yeah, well, maybe you plus sign over Sean and I, but we were talking about the Astros game last night, Cam, and their moves at the deadline. Before we move on to some other thoughts on the Astros, your overall impressions from last night and the Astros at the trade deadline.
C+.
C+.
Yeah.
So you wanted more? Is that the criticism? Or is it that you didn't want Varsho or I guess
you know
didn't
what?
Want to lose Eric Etty?
Let me recalculate that.
Okay.
D.
Oh, wow. It went down.
I'm not a big fan. I understand the allure with Varsho 2 years ago. I don't get it now. Because
he's not in great form.
One,
expiring. Too.
Yeah, dude can't stay healthy. He's played like 85 games on average the last 2 years. Everybody talked about, oh, he's like a power hitter. Okay, he hasn't hit 20 home runs in three.
I think he hit it last year.
Did he do it last year?
He's not a consistent 20 home run guy, to your point, but I believe one of those years he hit 20 was last year.
Yeah, it's just funny how like we were talking about all these outfielders and not at one point did we mention this guy. And then we trade a starting pitcher that we need because starting pitching was probably the biggest need on the team and traded it for...
More so than outfield? I mean, they're both definitely needs. I'm not trying to nitpick, but... Like, the outfield was pretty historically bad outside of whenever Yordan decided to randomly play left.
I think that if we're considering this team making the playoffs and what they need, I would have to say starting pitching.
I guess my pushback would be, like, there was at least two starting pitchers like, yeah, okay, we're cool. There was nobody in the outfield prior to the addition of Dalton Varsho, which you could argue still not one of those guys that I was cool with.
Well, not a big fan of... Lamonte Wade Jr.?
No, because he's Sean and I were talking like in the last segment. They've unfortunately stacked their roster with a bunch of outfielders that can only hit either lefties or only hit righties. And Lamont Wade's one of those guys too. Like he can only hit righties. He can't play against lefties. Taylor Trammell can only play against righties. He can't play against lefties. Until recently, Cam Smith was really only good against lefties. Like they
until last night.
Yeah, until last night. And he was amazing. He was one of the stock ups.
Yeah.
So shout out to your boy Cam Smith,
Thank you for that one day of a stock up.
Hold on. Scroll down. Yeah. See, look, eight games.
I apologize that I didn't talk more about myself.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for the apology there. But yeah, I get the criticism. I was hoping more for really just aggressiveness with it. Like, whether it be two outfielders or an outfielder plus a starting pitcher, Sean, like, I was just hoping Dana Brown was going to take this, like, hey, we actually have a chance to do something. Not only are we leading the American League West, but we're only a couple games behind the White Sox for a bye. Like, there's a chance to really do something here. And he didn't really treat the deadline like that.
Yeah, and I wonder, I mean, I think it's fair to wonder. I'm probably not the only one that's wondering, like, how much was he allowed to do given the Brian Abreu,
Trevor Larnach.
Larnach.
Yeah,
that vetoed trade, or reportedly vetoed.
Do you believe that report?
Yes.
I do, too.
Because it got picked up. You know, it, like, got...
The Twins were talking about
confirmed without being confirmed by, like, Passan and Rosenthal and all those people. So, shout out to that rando that had that first.
I think his last name was Marino?
Yes.
I just remember, like, Mark, that's an NFL quarterback.
Mike Marino?
Mike Marino, maybe?
But, yeah, I wonder how much freedom Dana Brown had to, you know, throw some chips around. Although it's not like what's it called? It's not like Jim Crane's normally like super prospect hoardy. Like, he wants to make the splash, yeah, and so that's what makes it even weirder.
It does, because I also don't think that we got the full story of what that deal was. I have trouble believing it was just a Abreu for Larnach. Like, that would seem pretty lopsided in the Astros' favor. Like, I have to imagine that there were prospects involved.
Yeah. Maybe
prospects that they didn't want to give up. But to your point, and which is a point I made last week at the trade deadline, Jim Crane has never seemed like a prospect hoarder. So if he's the one vetoing it and seemingly vetoing it over prospects, that doesn't add up. Although maybe he's just vetoing it over the Abreu part of it, because he said, like, or it was reported he said before the deadline, gave the team an edict to not trade for the Major League roster.
Yes, which... Ouch, Spencer Arrighetti.
Yeah. Well, technically he was on the injured list.
I know, but still.
I know. It's a little bit of a...
Well, wow. I guess they didn't think of me as a major league contributor. And listen, Brett.
Since June, not really.
And Brian Abreu, like, if you're box score watching, you're like, hey, what is it, 11 straight appearances?
Maybe. I know the numbers since May 1st are fantastic.
And so, you know. If you're just, like, playing, you know, back of the baseball card, but back of the box score results, I understand being like, wait, why are we training the best right-handed reliever you have to get this guy?
But, all right, so the other big news of the week for the Astros boys is that Carlos Correa might return, or at least that's the talk. We thought he was out for the season when he hurt himself taking batting practice. One of two Astros this year that have landed on the IL because of batting practice, Yonder Diaz being the other one. But... Carlos Correa got cleared to resume hitting activity. Like, I still don't think he's close. Like, I'd be shocked if we see him, frankly, in August. But I'm starting to believe that there's a real chance that Correa comes back. What is your belief in this possibility, Cam?
I think he comes back. But I hope to God that they take it slow with him. Because we need all the...
You're talking about playing him at DH? What is your definition of slow?
I would say DH.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say DH. I mean, you need some pop in your back. You need somebody that's got some sort of playoff experience. So, for me, if he's healthy, even if he's only 80%, I would much rather have him in the lineup at some sort of capacity than, you know, slow balling it and be like, no, we don't want him to get hurt.
Especially because if you're DHing him, you're putting Yordan in outfield.
See, that's
and
the problem.
Well, you know what?
As porous as the outfield has been,
yeah,
I'm okay with Yordan playing a little bit of left field.
I just don't know. Like, I hear what you're saying. He's a player over 30 who's been injury prone. It makes sense to bring him along slowly. I don't know if this team has the luxury to play Carlos Correa at third base. Because of how their roster is constructed. Like, that means...
Well, that's why you're saying DH.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Play Correa DH. What did I say at third?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, my bad. I don't think they have the luxury of playing Carlos. Like, how would that work in your lineup, Sean, if Carlos Correa is at DH? I guess Jordan's obviously having to play in left field every game, which is fine at Daikin, but, like, do you really want that on the road?
Maybe that's something where that's part of bringing Correa along slowly is just that when he, you know.
When you're at home, he's DHing because Jordan's on left?
Exactly. Okay. And I'm kind of building in the fact that Correa got cleared for baseball activities, earlier this week? Like, I don't know if he's going to play a ton this season. So it really is, like, can Jordan do it for, whatever, the last 3 weeks of the season? And then maybe the playoffs? Like, it's less of an ask for me of, like, you want to be safe with Jordan. I mean, you do a show with someone who has the Jordan rules
for sure.
And where, like, in...
There's so many of them now.
Was it the Wednesday...
The one where he slid home?
No. The last Toronto game where he didn't slide.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? I'm not mad at him for not sliding.
Jordan's so weird, man. Because there was that play at the plate. Like a few games before that one where he came home on a tag up and he slid in and it was so awkward. I'm like, Jordan, like just wait to the next at bat.
Yeah.
Just wait.
He hit the double
to drive in Pena on Wednesday, and he got deked, I guess, by the shortstop, it looked
kinda,
like.
Not great. But I say all that to say, 162 games of this alignment, absolutely not. But just to, get through the last three series of the regular season to clinch a playoff spot and hopefully make the playoffs, you could do that. Or, I mean, maybe depending on how Correa feels, you could do him at third, Paredes at second, and Altuve in left. You can try that again because that is something Altuve did last season.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of – because there's no such thing as an everyday lineup in baseball. That's kind of an outdated thought. But you will get to the point, assuming they get to the postseason, where you kind of are running out an everyday lineup. And
you
I'm trying
to
think of what
best.
That most optimized lineup would be. I think that most optimized lineup has to be Correa at third. You're going to need the DH for maybe getting Yonder's bat into the lineup because you want to start Vasquez because he's a better receiver at the plate. That might allow, obviously, Jordan to...
It is funny. This is just like what we talked about in February and March.
It kind of is.
It's just what that is. And so if we're just rehashing or, not like...
So you're saying we have an infield surplus that's untenable again?
I think it was tenable until Correa has – what kind of blood would you say courses through Correa's bloodstream, Brian?
Not dog.
Do you actually not know? I'm throwing you a lob.
Oh, no, I guess I don't know.
Wolverine blood.
Oh, Wolverine.
You said it five times the last 2 weeks.
You know what? That's on me. My bad.
At first I was like, I don't know. O positive?
I thought you were setting me up to say he's not a dog or something.
No, you're right.
He's not in the Wolverine blood. You know what? That needs to be a Mount Rushmore plus one for me. Has Wolverine blood.
They're fine until he decided to be way ahead of schedule.
Yeah, he was. All right. Just quickly, I want to go through some stock up, stock down, and then we'll go to break and talk about the Texans. I just want a couple shout outs, really. Yonder Diaz, since the beginning of July, stock up, hitting .272, .771 OPS, and a 36 homer pace over .162. So I do think that points to the roster construction where, especially in the postseason, you probably don't want him catching every game, but you got to get his bat in the lineup. So that's kind of also why Correa, I think, needs to play third and for an optimal lineup is you're probably going to need the DH for Yiner.
Yeah. And that, again, that's more of a how fast can Correa get out there?
Yeah, that's an October problem, not a early August problem, but that's something to look out. And another shout-out to Jose Altuve, who had really been scuffling his batting average very, very briefly, actually fell under .300 for his career for the first time, I think they said, since 2014 was with the broadcast.
But
last nine games, he's gotten hot again. Over those nine games, he has a five-game hitting streak currently. Four of those five are multi-hit, and he's hitting .389 over those last nine games, so the .950 OPS. So Altuve's starting to find it again.
Yeah, this kind of just feels like where Altuve's at in his career, where it is scuffle, 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 good baseball, but you always kind of know, like, this is going to end up around, like, 750 OPS, maybe, you know, 720.
That's about what he was last year.
Yeah, 720 OPS, where it's like, there's just going to be hot streaks and cold streaks. He's not like a...
Feels like the valleys are lower, but he's still going to get to a decent OPS.
And just with how, like, the way he plays, they look terrible.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
The swings he takes, the decisions he makes, like, look so much worse now that he's a little bit older.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it feels like he has more than anybody bats that end with his helmet falling off. I think more than any other major league player I can remember. And then you obviously throw in some of the base running issues he has.
He's
at times.
Officially passed George Springer for that. Yeah. For that lead.
George Springer was the king of the batting helmet falling off during the bat.
Was he or oh my god, I'm blanking on the name. They traded him for I think they brought over Mike Fiers in the deal.
Carlos Gomez.
Carlos Gomez. Yeah.
Gomez was with Fiers in the deal.
That's the king of helmets falling off.
Yeah.
When you're swinging.
Yeah, maybe.
Not a great trade, that one.
Springer's more of like he ends the at-bat on one knee.
That's it. I
sometimes
see
it's a home run, but sometimes it's...
Especially if it's leadoff.
It's terrible.
If it's leadoff, Springer's going deep.
He's just squatting after the swing.
There you go. All right, we'll go ahead and end the Astros conversation here. Talk about some of the training camp buzz going around with the Texans. CJ, Henry Toa gets paid. Tank Dell is back and a whole lot more. That when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, it's The Bullpen.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Here's John Bellmer, Cam Smith, Sean Mapes, and Brian McDonald.
All right, welcome back into The Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 with you until 11 o'clock. Coming up at 10:30, Mount Rushmore Plus One. Brian, Cam, and Sean with you, Colton behind the glass. If you want to join the conversation, hit us up on the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Call or text the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. You can also find us on X. I'm at Sack by BMAC. Cam is at Clutch City Cam. And Sean is at Sean A. Mapes. So, fellas, one of the big pieces of news coming out of Texans training camp this week is they locked up another player. And no, it was not C.J. Stroud. The hit list continues of players that Nick Caserio actually shows with actions that he loves. Henry Toa, 2 years, $16 million. And I believe now the entire group of defensive starters is locked up for not only this season, but next season. Y'all's thoughts on that move?
Yeah. We're doing inside linebacker two deals. Like, at this point, I'm like, isn't the whole point that you can draft and develop these guys?
And we'll get to a take on exactly that.
Like, can't you draft and develop another Henry Toa? He is a swarm guy, but it's like, I don't know.
He's kind of a guy like you described what Dana Brown should go get at the deadline. Like, he's a guy. I don't think he's much more than that.
Yeah.
He's fine. But, like, now he was absolutely...
Like, we're giving these guys $8 million a year now?
Yeah, which isn't
much, but, like...
I was going to say that.
It's not much, but
it's... But it's, like, this guy could be, draft someone in the third round and then wait a year. And then, they're as good as Henry Toa. Like, I don't know why we're... Okay, sure.
Absolute credit for Caserio for hitting on the pick, because you certainly got more value out of him than where his draft spot in the fifth round would suggest. But, yeah, like... And this is where I'll transition to C.J. Stroud. Sean, you've heard this take. Cam, I'm going to debut this on you for the first time here. But, this feels like Henry Toa is the class of player. Not that $16 million from Henry Toa financially would stop you from paying C.J. Stroud, because that's obviously, like, less than half of 1 year of C.J. Stroud, even on a low-end deal, right? But Henry Toa to... Sean's point is the class of player that you don't pay when you know you're about to have to pay a quarterback, franchise quarterback money. So because of that, I'm kind of leaning now. They've taken care of everybody this offseason. I don't think the actions of the team say, because they've paid Aziz top three linebacker money, because they're extending Henry Toa on top of all the other, they re-upped Nico Collins again, right? You stack all those moves on top of each other. I don't care what they say to us in the media, whether it's Caserio going to Rich Eisen, whether it's him with other stations in the city. They could say they love CJ all they want. They may like him. They certainly talk about him as a man. They like him as a man. But the actions of the team paying everyone else don't scream we're about to pay our quarterback, because you don't sign guys, fifth round linebackers that you could replace with a third round pick. To Sean's point, you don't usually extend them right before you go out and give a quarterback $55 million.
You surely don't. Which I think kind of what you were alluding to tells you that, yeah, they, on the surface, they might say that they love CJ, but it's pretty evident that it's one of those things where it's just like, dude, you got to prove it to us this year.
I'll believe they love CJ if they pay him before the season begins.
Yeah. And like,
and I'm not even clamoring for that. Like, that's not me saying like they're wrong for that. Like, I fully support not paying CJ.
Yeah.
And unless he surprisingly gives you a Sam Darnold deal, but they can't convince me of what they're saying if you don't actually pay him.
It's also like, if I'm CJ at this point, I'm like, well, I'll just, again, not throw four interceptions in the first half of a playoff
game. And then
you'll
pay me $50 million.
Like you were going to do before, yeah. I did that. Like, I feel like at this point there might be more of like, I think it's David Mulligetta who's like, we're not signing anything. Like, we're not signing any BS you're offering. Because why would you offer anything serious to CJ Stroud this offseason?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, some people have taken, you know, Caserio talking about, you know, we've had productive talks with his agent. Things are progressing. They've taken that as, oh, this deal might actually happen. Like, I've seen that thought, including on this own station, quite a few places. I take that more as lip service to not embarrass CJ. Because if the conversation is the opposite, obviously if he comes out and says, no, we're not looking to extend him, that would be embarrassing. But I think they know that the media is going to ask, what about CJ? What about CJ? What about CJ? Next year is going to be his fifth year options. What about CJ? You paid Aziz. You paid Nico. You paid all these other guys. What about CJ? So they're just trying to throw the media off of, hey, we like CJ. We're working towards a deal. We'll see what happens before the season starts. I think this is kind of a fluff, pat CJ on the back and to the public to get everyone basically to stop asking.
But doesn't that say something? Like, if you're having to soften it, doesn't that tell you that they think that he's soft?
Kind of.
Right? Like,
think it's also just like the Texans just don't want anyone ever talking about him ever. Like, they just don't want to ever...
Yeah, look at Joe Mixon last
yeah,
year.
Yeah, like, I think it's more that, where true. They're just like, you know, feed him bleep, keep him in the dark. Just like, don't... Why would we
CJ
tell you...
CJ who?
I mean, yeah, like, again, you'd mentioned Nick Caserio big on Rich Eisen and said exactly zero things of any interest.
Like, yeah, Rich was like...
He talked for 25 minutes and said nothing interesting.
We don't have the time to take... to play this clip, but you pull an audio that we played on Jeremy and Joe yesterday where he was directly asked by Rich about what is it going to take for CJ to show that he's worth of a contract, and Nick Caserio talked more about the AFC South and the Colts and the Titans than he did about CJ. It was like a 3-minute clip. He never says CJ Stroud's name once in the
he
response.
He never like refers to like him in as a like singular entity.
No.
He immediately goes, "Well, every play in the league needs to produce and blah blah
prove
blah."
Himself
and then
year
and
to
then
year.
Just pivots to like, and we believe we have a foundation built on what, and it's like and like I don't know how Rich Eisen or anyone interviewing just doesn't like interrupt and be like, "I asked about CJ Stroud." Like
yeah.
What like
I
isn't it kind of
go ahead.
Isn't it kind of was it last week when we listened to like the D'Amico interview and he didn't name like he wasn't naming names, but he was basically like,
oh, if you get a if you deserve a contract, you'll get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll get it. Like you have to do more than like one thing. It's just kind of like, I feel like everything's being directed at CJ without saying CJ, because CJ's gonna get a little hurt.
I don't think you're completely off, because when you hear when they actually
Jesus.
I know, I had a moment there. Literally. Go ahead.
Do you have tuberculosis or something?
Oh my God.
Like he's just been coughing all show. Like, he just I'm used to doing the show the Icebox with Joe and he just he's like
yeah, I had an Arthur Smith moment there. Looking for one more score.
I know I didn't like actually vamp in any way that talked about the text.
No, you just talked about me coughing.
Was that good?
Yeah, it was good enough. Whatever.
Better than just you coughing on mic.
It was better than just me coughing into the mic. Yes. But with the when the Texans, to Cam's point about like CJ's psyche, whenever they actually do answer the questions about CJ, it's always pumping up like, oh, Nick Caserio, that clip we played last week of he's had the best offseason of his career.
He showed up to camp.
D'Amico Ryan's going on about, like, we love him as a man. I love CJ. Like, I've been in love with this guy since he came in through the door for his top 30 visit, right? I do think there was a conservative effort to make sure that they talk about CJ glowingly, which is kind of what the Texans do about everybody.
Yeah.
But I do think there's definitely a point, like...
Also just with, like, what we've seen, like, the discourse around CJ being, where it's like... He walks into camp with a baggy shirt and like he gets crushed. Imagine if like
D'Amico, 30 million people are bagging on him.
Imagine if D'Amico Ryans are just like, needs to step it up. Like, you know, like.
Which is kind of sad when not asked about it directly.
Yeah, but it's like, I get what you guys are saying. I do kind of think that CJ has a little, like, he has a little bit of, I took that personally, but he's also not Michael Jordan and he can't like really back it up.
You see him pouting on the sidelines during games. Like,
but I also think that it's like actually smart for these guys to just like, we're not making this a story in any way whatsoever.
Oh no, I think the way the Texans have played this is smart because they're trying to pump up CJ's confidence by not talking bad about him through the media. And they're trying to get people to stop asking about the contract, which could be a distraction. But at the same time, I see... basically, no chance there's actually a contract this offseason.
This offseason, for sure not.
No.
Next offseason...
I mean, you kind of have to.
Yeah, I'm still in, like... I just don't know what you do, like, if you don't bring him. Like, it's just like...
I just don't... Yeah, like, I don't know... Okay, maybe I should say they'll have to. But I see almost no chance he actually plays in the fifth-year option. It's either they sign him or they look to trade him for something.
Yeah. And even
Davis
then,
Mills.
Like, yeah. Because what you said with like Henry Toa and like paying everyone on the defense, like you also can't go out and get Baker Mayfield if you're signing everyone on your defense.
Yeah, like, yeah, that's interesting. They just like, I know the salary cap at times is kind of fake in football. We saw that for years with the Saints where they would start the offseason $30 million in the hole and somehow they would still sign free agents. And Caserio's done this with restructures. He's restructured Danielle Hunter and others multiple times to make room when we thought they didn't have any. But like, I don't know, man. At some point, there is a cap, right? At some point, like, the money does matter. And
you actually can't pay everybody.
Yeah, and that getting back to where I began with this point, like the Henry Toa Toa thing, like, at some point you have to pick a guy like, we like him, but he's replaceable. Yeah. We like him, but we can go draft somebody in the third round, especially on the defensive side where they've had hit after hit.
That's the entire point.
That's the entire point. Like, at some point, there's a guy where we're like, you know, we like him, but if we want to afford the top-end guys – we got to draft to replace him to get cheaper talent on the roster. And they've literally locked up the entire all-11 defense for the next 2 years. That doesn't scream, we're about to pay our quarterback franchise money.
Or any quarterback.
Or...
like, we're gonna draft some guy.
Yeah,
Or go Davis Mills.
Or go Geno Smith. Aaron Rodgers, one more time.
Yeah.
I mean, it could just be one of those... Aaron Rodgers takes LeBron James deal.
It could be just one of those things where it's just like, okay, well, we know the defense is elite. Let's keep the continuity and keep it together because at least we know that they're going to be consistent.
Yeah.
And worry about the offense. It's almost kind of like a flip with how you would pay offensive players as opposed to like defensive players like y'all are talking about. You can just replace them in the draft. It's like maybe the Texans are just looking at it as like, well, the defense is our team. Let's pay these guys, keep them together, and we'll worry
we'll
and
throw
fix
darts
the offense.
At the board on offense?
Yeah. No Jackson.
Hey, Kenny Pickett was pretty good in the Hall of Fame game.
Yeah. Carson Beck was.
Haynes King
was good.
Clutch Gene.
That guy.
You know what? Low key, that was a hell of a game.
Actually,
lowest of keys.
Never in my life.
That's something you cannot say outside of a sports radio show and be taken seriously.
Never
as a human
in my
being,
life have I missed three-fourths of a Hall of Fame game and then be like, you know what? Let me tune in. Like, ever in my life. Ever.
I started it and I was like, you know what? Carson Beck started. Let me see what he's got. And then it just kept sticking around. I was like, this is actually pretty good.
This is actually pretty good. 33-30?
Well, it was a walk-off touchdown the last second.
I feel like every Hall of Fame game is like 10-7 or something.
I'm 42 years old. That's the first time a Hall of Fame game's been good.
Football's back.
Is that the first time you've seen the final whistle of a Hall of Fame game?
No, because I've been paid to watch the Texans at times. Okay. That, like, I have to see
humble
the whole
rag.
Yeah, no, not really.
Got paid to watch.
No, it was Bleacher Report. Like, it was barely any money.
Sorry, Hall of Fame game. When he fake pumped it, do you actually? I don't think any of the defenders bought it though. So I feel for me, I feel like that's even more impressive because it's like you didn't juke them.
No,
so they were still coming after you.
They all know Haynes King's a runner.
Yeah, but he still did he still did the fake throw, and it's just like I don't think anybody bought that, and he still got in for the score. I was like, that makes it even more impressive.
His throwing motion is wild.
That's why I don't think
he would be worse.
Whoever fixed Josh Allen. Panthers need to call that if they have any hope of making Haynes.
Hence why he went from A&M to Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech, where they don't
95% running school. Yeah,
exactly. He's a hell of a runner.
Yeah,
just the throwing motion.
They don't win the game if he's not a hell of a runner.
No, they don't. A few more bits of Texans news before we go to the break here. Tank Dell is back. Speaking of being back, Tank Dell is not only
what a tank
not on the pup list, but he's actually practicing and padded practices. Like, I know we've kind of had to temper our expectations all offseason long, but are you guys open to the idea of Tank being a big part of this team this year? Where are your hopes and expectations right now?
No, I'm closed off on him being a big part.
What would be... Oh, okay. I was like...
I love Tank. Kook's house.
Yeah, come on, Kook.
I don't know.
I'll step in. I am. Like, I don't think... I think, actually, honestly, a tell was that they let him talk to the media. Like, I don't think they let him talk to the media. Like, oh, well, he's still only 75%. Like, he might not be there for week one. The fact that he's in padded practices and talking to the media, to me, screams they're treating him as he's ready to go.
Well, he better be. I mean, me and Sean witnessed him live kicking soccer balls at Dick's Sporting Goods.
How'd he look?
Dick's Hassle Sports.
He looked agile.
Okay.
Limber on his feet. Fleet footed.
I would say.
Also very small.
Stick to American football. I would say that.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Yes. All right. he looked healthy. Healthy enough.
I don't know. I saw something.
He looked alive.
Yeah. I mean, Danielle Hunter looked like a mountain of a man. So, you know, next to him, everyone looked like we all looked.
I thought I looked small against normal sized people, and then Danielle Hunter stood behind me, and I was flabbergasted. I couldn't even hear my own thoughts.
Did you call him, sir?
I didn't even talk to him. I don't think my voice would have reached.
Yeah,
he would have been like, "Who is talking?"
You heard your neck looking up so high.
I didn't know food talked.
I kind of look. I don't know what being back for Tank looks like because it was obviously catastrophic knee injury. But I'll say this: I think he's the third highest targeted player.
Okay.
On the team.
Okay.
Nico one, Higgins two, and I think Tank gets the third most targets on the team.
That's what I was going to ask is, like, what is big part of this team?
I think he out-targets Dalton Schultz. I think he out-targets Jalen Knoll, who also returned to practice after what was reported kind of as to be a broken finger. And then, obviously, he out-targets the guys like Xavier Hutchinson and Justin Watson.
I don't –
whoever.
I have to – go a separate direction than you. I still think Dalton's going to be top three in targets.
Yeah, because he's just going to get so many checkdowns and, like, you know, the Dalton Schultz in the flat for 4 yards. Like, he is just
Dalton Schultz special, baby.
Four yards
fall down.
I think Tank Dell will, like, be more effective of a player, but I actually do think that
more,
like,
targets Tank or Knoll.
Tank. I think Tank.
Cam.
Man, that's tricky because
there's also, like, just the Tank Dell, like, only plays five games element.
Yeah,
there is.
Didn't we talk about a couple weeks ago when, like, some projections were coming out and it was like, I don't know what website, like, you had brought up with it, but it was like Tank Dell was like expected to have like 32 catches.
Yeah.
Like,
I don't remember that at all. That must have been somebody else.
Oh, no, sir. I've only ever done this show with you.
No, I just meant, I meant the conversation didn't happen here.
But I think we'll have more targets than Noel. But I think you can't have him as a return man.
No, I'm with you there. Noel, yeah. I think Noel's your return man.
Yeah.
And, like, I get the idea of, well, Tank's always injured. But I still kind of push back on that because both injuries he had were highly, like, kind of freak accidents. Well, maybe with the first one you could say it was also avoidable because it was just dumb. But he breaks his leg in year one being an inline blocker with someone rolling up behind him. And then Jared Wayne, for some reason, runs the same route as him against the Chiefs in year two and takes out his knee that cost him last season as well. Like, that's not a non-contact, tears ACL, you know, pulls his hamstring all the time type of injury. That's a freak accident, that, which, I mean, could happen again, but I wouldn't bet on it.
Well, for me, it's more like because those things happened, the, like, knock-on
he's
effect.
He's just lesser than?
Or just, like, makes it more likely, because he had several knee surgeries to prepare all that.
It was more than just a simple ACL. So, it was everything.
It's not like he has a bad, like, meniscus. It's like he has a bad ACL, MCL, PCL.
Kneecap.
Like,
I think the kneecap, like, moved or something.
And that's why, it mixed with the fact that he
has a life alert wrapped around him.
Oh, well, that's not fair.
Yeah. Well,
is not it fair. Not, Brian?
Oh.
I've fallen and I can't get up.
Wow. I thought you were a Houston Cougars fan. You're out here talking trash.
I love Tank Dell.
Apparently not.
I absolutely.
You're the lowest of the three of us on him.
No, we're not going to turn this into a Lance McCullers thing again.
Because you danced on Lance McCullers' grave last week.
I don't know where his grave's at.
The takeaway from the first hour of the bullpen. Actually, Colton, can you make this the title of the first hour podcast? Cam Smith hates Tank Dell. When the bullpen returns for
don't
hour
do
two,
that.
We're going to talk about NFL win totals. I love and have some fun with some audio from Jim Harbaugh, which whatever he was on when he talked to Cowherd, please share because that looked like some fun. That when the bullpen returns, ESPN Radio 97.5.